Hello, and welcome to yet another edition of Comfortably Unnumb, the official podcast of the Umbrella Society. My name is Blake Anderson, your host, and also the programs manager here at the Umbrella Society in beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin-speaking people. Now, season three of Comfortably Unnumb podcast is just off to the races. This is our third episode, and I'm having such a great time bringing on more amazing individuals, sharing their inspirational stories. Never ceases to blow me away, not only with the grit and determination and hard work these folks have put into achieving their recovery, but also just the courage of giving back and coming and sharing their story. You know, these are very intimate and personal stories. But I believe people come on to share, you know, because there's this knowledge that it's going to resonate. It means a lot to hear somebody who has gone through their challenges with substance use and, you know, found some success in their recovery. So, you know, always so much admiration for everybody coming onto this program and sharing the story. It's not an easy thing to do. And today I'm incredibly excited with our guest. We have Derek on the podcast today. Derek is another member of our recovery campaign. So you might have seen him on buses, driving around town, on our social media page. And this is also an Umbrella employee. So Derek is incredibly passionate about the work he does for Umbrella. He works in community outreach, and he also works at the liver clinic down at the hospital and actually on our addiction medicine consult service at the hospital, making an incredible impact in our community and the lives of those that he is serving. So incredibly happy to have Derek on to share his story, and you know, I hope you can enjoy it. Okay, Derek, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time. I know you've got an incredibly busy week doing your outreach work for Umbrella and the community, but I really appreciate this. I think it's always great hearing stories of recovery, and I know it takes you know, a little bit to, you know, to share your story, but it really means a lot for you to come in, and you know, you've really made an impact in the Umbrella world and with our clients and also with staff. So it's, you know, I'm really honored that you you know, took the time to come in here today and talk about this.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah, awesome. And you know, you this year were part of our recovery campaign as well, and you know, it's kind of cool seeing you know, how much reach that had in our community, and you know, I'm really proud. I believe you and Scott, we had Scott on last season to tell his story, and it was really cool seeing you guys together, and you know, just the brotherhood that comes along with recovery. It was a really cool, just, you know, good image of that, you know, with you two guys together. So yeah
absolutely, to have friends in recovery is absolutely a blessing and a gift,
right? Yeah. So listen, you've been working. I've gotten to know you a little bit. I don't know a lot about your story, so this is new for me as well. And you know, I always give you the option to dive back as far as you want to when it comes to your recovery journey. But I do like to hear, and I think it is important to hear, kind of a bit of the backstory and you know, where addiction kind of started showing its face in your life, and either with those around you or yourself. But where do you kind of start your story, your recovery story?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, anything that I share is obviously upon reflection, is a part of my recovery process. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly didn't have awareness for a large part of my life how much addiction was impacting my day-to-day and my life and the ability and the choices that I had. You know, I kind of go back to like 12 years old, you know, was an exciting moment. My sister was having a house party, the parents were away, and, you know, I invited a friend over. You know, my I had one friend at the house party, and access to the liquor cabinet, and I proceeded to, you know, kind of line up a series of mugs and pour, you know, what I felt I could get away with from each one of the bottles.
Right.
And you know, we started drinking that, and at a certain point, my friend was like, "Yeah, yeah, I'm good,"
right?
You know, and I didn't know the meaning of that. You know, there was no off switch for me there. You know, right. I proceeded to drink them all.
Okay.
You know, and you know, I can see, you know, I can see the beginning of that one is too many and a thousand is never enough. You know, like I was always that kind of drinker, you know, whether it was to black out from the beginning or whether it was to just be the person who was always the most intoxicated, the person who was always, you know, requiring assistance to kind of get through the door of the party, the person right. who, you know, was being, you know, seen out of the party, that sort of thing, right?
You're always the one taking it to that extreme.
Absolutely.
And that's like right from the get-go, pretty much, in your Absolutely. Experience, right? Yeah. So, I mean, obviously when you're a kid and, you know, 12, 13, I mean, I don't think teenagers have that wherewithal to, you know, see it within themselves or even see it within their friend group. You know, I always remember, you know, it was always kind of funny, you know, when you had characters that would overdo it, and it was just kind of part of a persona almost. And, you know, a little bit of an image, you know, and so for you, how did that look kind of when you're navigating this? So obviously, like, there was this, you know, extremism when it came to your substance use at an early age. Was there any awareness to that or any friends, you know, bring it to your awareness? Yeah, how did you navigate through your high school, you know, your early teen years?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, well, that just carried on, you know, that carried on all the way through, you know, out of high school, you know, and okay. into kind of, you know, later on kind of a first serious relationship, you know, and being in the situation where, you know, where drinking was an issue, you know, I would have wine at dinner, or, you know, family occasions and stuff. And it inevitably led to me, you know, being, you know, I've taken it too far, you know, I remember, you know, when I first started to sort of look at like my alcoholism and my substance use, you know, that was even after, you know, after being institutionalized, you know, I was in a psych ward, you know, I ended up at Riverview Hospital for a period of time, you know, and,
how old were you at this point?
It was probably early 20s.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, and even then, like, I didn't necessarily think that it was the substances. You know, at that point then, I thought that it was a mental health diagnosis, you know. There was some mental health diagnoses being kind of bandied about, and I, you know, was kind of, like, looking at that kind of being the issue, you know. You know, I just kind of carried on. I carried on, you know, self-medicating in a way, right? Self-medicating with, you know, to fix the problems that I was creating through my use and fix the problems that, I was having with kind of, you know, a little bit of that kind of that young kind of coping with the world and the way the world was, right.
Sure.
You know, self-medicating to kind of, to get through the day to day, as well as, you know, the feelings of culture and society that, you know, that, hey, partying and, you know,
right.
going out and getting drunk and
it's pretty standard practice.
Smoking weed.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So by this time, I was probably in my 30s. You know, I'd had a couple of kids by that time. You know, was still experiencing kind of chronic pot use, you know, was kind of the main thing at this point. You
okay.
know, daily.
So when you're your early 20s, obviously, this is like alcohol was kind of rampant. And then, you know, after the... You're in the psych ward, and there's some kind of mental health challenges that came up. How did the rest of the 20s play out for you then? Just this kind of period of self-medicating, or how you were obviously cutting down the alcohol use? Was that kind of determined to being more of an issue with you? Or
so, yeah, so the mental health diagnoses, you know, were something, as I said, that I was kind of dealing with, wasn't sure, you know, what was kind of going on for there. I spent a time when I came out of Riverview that I ended up in sort of like, well, would be a kind of a second stage transition house.
Okay.
And I started feeling better, you know. I also hadn't been doing substances for quite some period of time.
Right.
So, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, here I was like, okay, well, let's get back at this. You know, I got the, I got the world to get back in. I've lost some time here.
Making up for lost time. Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta get my money right. Right. You know?
Sure.
And so like, let's go, like, let's just forget about all that. And that's one of the things that I really value with work with Umbrella,
right,
is to have had an opportunity to, you know, potentially sit across from someone who had gone through what I'd been going through at that point. Cause right, I was dealing with medical professionals and things, and you know, they were providing the support that they could provide, but had I maybe had an opportunity for someone to say, hey, there is a situation here, you know, right, there's an issue,
right,
that's caused what's happened in your life to this point.
Right. You're not looking at the big picture here. Right. Yeah.
So let's look at getting well at right, this foundational point.
Right.
Before you just tear off and like,
right,
end up
taking that pause to really do the work. So you're on that solid ground. So you kind of feel like you just took off without really having that foundational work kind of under your belt.
Yeah, I didn't do any work to look at why I had ended up in the things I was. You know, I had, it was always an outside issue. You know, it was the world didn't treat me right. It was that this person didn't do this. You know, it was all outside factors. It was no personal responsibility, or, you know, even for, you know, personal self-care.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right. So there's a lot of practices that weren't getting put into place, but you're like, hey, I'm feeling better. I've lost some time. Let's go. Let's get back on things. Right. So not going off on solid footing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting.
And, right, you know, and within a couple of years, I was living in London, England, you know, so there's a culture, right?
Wow.
The pub culture.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, living my life, you know, there, drinking and carrying on and, you know, up into my early 30s. Not suffering a lot of like the loss and things. Like I was holding a job and I was drinking in the evenings and the weekends, but you know, I came to work hungover and so
it's the functional aspect of it. Yeah.
Well,
functional to a degree, right.
It's such a deceiving term, right?
Sure.
When I hear the word functional alcoholic,
right,
it's like,
right,
well, that's kind of setting the bar a little low.
Right. Yeah. Fair play. You were just kind of hanging on for dear life, but keeping a semblance of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I came back here. I had two wonderful kids, and but you know, still like when they were very young, you know, using pot, you know, drinking during times, you know, family events and things like that, and you know, but using pot on a daily basis,
right?
You know,
okay.
So still that self-medicating, and when I separated from my kid's mom. I just ended up in this situation in my doctor's office. Okay. And I was feeling a little suicidal, if there's such a thing, but you know, I was contemplating.
Yeah.
And also though, I said to my doctor, you know, like I'm losing relationships in my life, you know, and I'm about to lose another relationship that means a lot to me. And I realized that that alcohol is a problem. Because I realized that a lot of the problems are causing when I'm drinking too much and, you know, I'm getting into arguments or we're having disagreements or my behavior is erratic or out of the norm, right?
Was that the first time you really, you know, made that declaration? Was that the first time that you really came to that conclusion?
That was.
Right?
That was, yeah.
That's a pretty big step, yeah.
And I had a fantastic, fantastic doctor. And he said to me, you know, I'm going to call ahead to Pez, to the psychiatric unit at Royal Jubilee Hospital. And I know the psychiatrist is in there right now. Like they'll see you.
Right.
And, you know, given what I know about the sort of system now, like, wow, that was quite a thing. Right.
Right.
So I drove down to Royal Jubilee and walked into Pez and, you know, essentially was like, sitting in Pez, like I was waiting for a doctor's appointment. I mean, like the perception of it now versus what was happening then is, you know, I really see, you know, the amount of my denial and, you know, and all the sorts of things that I had. And anyways, I was there for a good few hours. And I was, you know, hey, like when am I going to see this doctor?
Right.
You know, entitlement, you know, not no awareness of like,
right,
you know, what I was going through or, even just, you know, the other people, the other patients that were in there, you know. Sure. Eventually the psychiatrist came to talk to me and said, you know, like, we're not going to keep you in here, but there's a program that you can access. And at that time it was called VIMHA, Vancouver Island Mental Health and Addictions, which is now AOT on Quadra Street.
Right.
And they said there's an intake on Tuesdays or Thursdays at 1:30. You kind of got to go there a little bit early so that you get, you know, you get an intake appointment, and then mm-hmm. from there you can get some help. And, you know, I left there, and, you know, that week or the following, the next available opportunity, I was there. I was there at VIMHA, and I got an intake, and I got set up with some counseling and some men's group. So essentially what was like outpatient treatment.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. And
sounds a little bit more accessible than it is now. I mean, that's just to walk in there and get an intake. That takes 3 months now. So that's okay. That's nice. So you can feel like you can get some momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And so I did that, you know, I white knuckled through like not using, I was using other substances at the time. And so I kind of white knuckled through, you know, as well too, just the mental obsession and compulsion, right? Because I was managing everything that I was doing, you know, through using substances, you know. Mm. If I had a good thought or a bad thought, or a good day or a bad day, or just an okay day, like that was a reason, right? It didn't matter to me. But I did a little bit of white knuckling, and I started attending the groups that were on offer there. There was a men's group,
okay,
actually, that they had at the time that was in the evenings. And then during the day, I would see a counselor there. And I remember the intake. The intake appointment was with a doctor. And she says, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. And, you know, the idea is that if you answer, I can't remember the exact number, but a number of these questions with a yes, you know, you might have a problem with alcohol.
Right.
The first question she asked me that I remember was, have you ever tried to cut down on your drinking? And I remember at the time kind of laughing and going, oh yeah, that's just not working, you know?
Hmm.
And then another question was, has anyone ever talked to you about like the amount that you're drinking using substances? And I was like, yeah, it's not really any of their business.
Right.
The third question that I remember was, you know, do you ever get into fights when you're using substances? And I was like, yeah, yeah, all the time.
Right.
Fighting and drinking, you know,
that's
like,
right. Yeah,
it goes hand in hand. Right. And it was at that point when she kind of looked down and she kind of made that check for a yes, that I realized
right.
a lot of my perceptions and ideas about what I thought was normal using substances was completely incorrect. You know, I started right. thinking about the people who could drink, and they didn't get into arguments with their spouse. They didn't get into fights on the street. They, you know, they didn't create chaos in their family's lives. You know, they didn't have to think about when they had their last drink or how quickly they were drinking it or how they needed mm-hmm. to manage it. It didn't take up that real estate in their mind.
Right.
You know, and that was kind of that bell that was rung that I could never unring again after that. Right.
Okay. Right.
So I did the groups, you know, the AOT and the men's group and the counseling, and so I'd had actually a little bit of time sober. I was what I think now was kind of like a dry drunk, you know.
Yeah.
I hadn't really done much self work as far as changing some of the behaviors or the things as far as, you know, how I was when I was drinking, but I sure. wasn't drinking. I wasn't using.
Right. Substances removed. There's still a lot of work to be done, but right.
Absolutely. And yeah. I didn't really begin on that work. I was, you know, I was at that moment just content or happy or enjoying the fact that, you know, that I wasn't using substances.
Yeah.
So I wasn't creating harm based around that.
Sure.
But, I ended up getting introduced to a gentleman by the name of Gordon Harper, who was, had started this organization called Umbrella, and it was back when they were in King's Road.
Okay.
And I said, you know, I'd really like to do some service. You know, I'd really like to be able to help and talk to people. And Gordon at that time asked me if I was doing any 12-step groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I'm not. I'm going to to AOT. And he said, you know, like that's an important part of what we do is knowing kind of what the services and resources are that are out there. And so I started going to some 12-step groups, and you know, I went to a handful of meetings maybe, but I didn't really understand what was going on. Okay. And I didn't really feel like I got much illustration or help. You know, it was kind of like, don't you know who I think I am? Like, I'm coming in here to get, to learn this program. And, and it was like, I can see now I probably just didn't connect with people either. You know, I probably had still some of that, that resistance, you know, that chip of like, well, I'm going to do this my way. And, you know, I wasn't, curious enough or really having the humility enough to kind of ask, you know, what is this all about and kind of seek that. And so I stopped going to those meetings, you know, and, I got
very different too, to, you know, clinical AOT style. Yeah. Meeting as well. Right. So yeah, very foreign. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you stopped.
So I stopped going. And so, so I had, I ended up with 8 years. 8 years of sobriety and clean time. Yeah. And then it was as simple as being out with someone that I was seeing at the time and them saying, you know, like, I really wish that, you know, we could enjoy like a glass of wine with this nice meal that we're eating.
Wow.
And after 8 years, I said, hey, of course I can. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I've stopped. I've shown that I've stopped. Right. Can do this. And I took that drink. And I can remember today even, you know, having that drink and seeing that glass on the table and thinking, I have to drink this like a normal person.
Right.
You know, or what I consider to be a normal person, you know.
Right.
I have to manage every sip that I take so that I'm not just drinking this down to get that next one.
Right.
You know, I finished that meal with one glass of wine and I don't know, sometime later, you know, she said, well, I think I liked it better when you weren't drinking. So I stopped drinking.
Mm.
But I started smoking weed again.
Okay, so it just kind of just opened that door again to
absolutely
substances, right?
Absolutely. And it took me 2.5 years to get back into the rooms. You know, and this time I went to a 12-step meeting. Okay. You know, I found myself in a place of hopelessness and you know, it was just something that after having not gone to a meeting for about 6 years, I guess, mm-hmm. something like that, to all of a sudden, you know, realizing that I needed to stop again. And I heard, you know, my thought very clearly in my mind was go to a 12-step meeting.
Okay.
And I looked at when the next meeting was, and I went to the next meeting that was available to me. And
that's a big statement, though. And after having all this sober time, and this, yeah, obviously that's got to be a huge blow to the confidence too. When you know you're back almost where you started and having to make that start over. That must've been quite that first meeting. Was it difficult walking through those doors or was there conviction behind it?
You know, there was definitely like some humility, probably some shame. You know, I can remember the room. I can see that people were there, but overall I felt, you know, a love and an acceptance there. You know, I heard people share on their experience, you know, those who had come back from a relapse, those who had come back, you know, and, you know, the idea that, you know, I don't lose that clean time. I don't lose that sober time, you know? And also, there's a reason why I'm going back, because I know that for me, life without substances is a life worth living.
Right.
You know? So you know, to get back into the room and to be able to start that again is a gift, you know.
Right.
Some people, you know, they don't ever come back from a relapse.
Right. And I think that you just bring up, you know, such a good point. It's just something that I've just seen time and time again. It's this feeling of starting from scratch, you know, after you've had the success and put in, you know, some serious amount of sober time. And then with that relapse, feeling like, oh, it's all for nothing. But you're totally right, you know, and I'm so glad that message is, you know, it was kind of, you know, prevalent, you know, for you that, yeah, it doesn't take away that clean time, right? You know, so, yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, and you know, and as I said, like this time, you know, kind of going back into, you know, I went back to a 12-step group. I didn't, you know, go back to the AOT. I didn't go back to those things. I went back to a 12-step group. And, you know, and this time, instead of leaving, you know, and thinking that I was going to work at the program according to, you know, pick and choose like a buffet, I could select which parts I was going to do and which parts I wasn't.
Sure.
You know, I came with a willingness.
Right. So you're going to say yes. You're going to do what was needed.
Yeah. I'm going to follow the suggestions, you know.
Right.
You know, suggestions that'll save my life, you know.
Yeah.
Right. You know, working with somebody who sponsored me in that program, a mentor, somebody that I can talk to when I'm struggling. You know, I had good fellowship, you know, these great friends that we talked about earlier, you know, through that time, people who are, doing and working the same challenges and processes around staying clean, staying sober for today, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that is quite a thing, you know, like I think about this idea of asking for help, you know, this idea that, you know, I need help in order to do this. And, you know, that's such a difficult decision to do, you know, but when I think about all the times in my day that I ask for help for the smallest, most insignificant things, the idea that I would need help for such a fundamental life change, life learning, life lesson, you know, to ask for that help, you know, how could I think I could do that on my own, you know?
Right.
So yeah, so that willingness to work that program for 3 years, you know, and then, you know, it happened to me again, you know. I stopped working that 12-step program. I stopped, you know, speaking to my sponsor. I stopped going to meetings, and it wasn't too long that, you know, experimentation with, you know, I was feeling a little bit of depression, you know, mm-hmm. I was feeling depressed. I was feeling that I had some depression, and I was hearing in the news about, you know, work that was done with mushrooms, magic mushrooms. That was to work towards depression. And, I mean, right. Medically,
right.
That sounds like something that, you know, that would be, you know, I could get a prescription for that for my doctor eventually. So why don't I start experimenting with magic mushrooms in order to, like, you know, relieve this depression, you know?
Right.
I'll honor the plant, the mushroom, you know, I'll prepare my body. I'll have a ceremony around it.
This is medicine. It's not a substance.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know? And, you know, when I share this, sometimes people say, well, psychedelics are not addictive. I say, you know,
depends on who you are.
Yeah. I say, I'm an alcoholic, right. You know,
right.
I use drugs, you know, alcoholically. So psychedelics, absolutely. I use them alcoholically. You know,
right.
I wasn't long before I was just using them on the regular basis,
right.
You know, it didn't matter the ceremony, it didn't matter the experience. Now it was strictly just a matter of like tuning out, you know?
Yeah.
I, you know, in that relapse, I didn't use any other substances. I didn't go back to alcohol. I didn't go to any of the other substances I used in the past. You know, I had this idea that, you know, I'd had such a good conscious contact with my higher power that this was that God molecule was going to open that channel up even more, you know?
Right.
And eventually, you know, I found myself just at that point again of like, you know, I had a conversation with actually, it was my daughter, my daughter said, you know, Dad, this is a relapse. And I, you know, even in that, I had denial.
Really?
And I was laying, you know, down one evening, you know, thinking about the words that she'd spoken to me and the conversation that we'd had. And she was right, you know, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And this was definitely a relapse. So I picked up the phone and I got back in touch with my sponsor and he said, get to a meeting. And I went to a meeting and that began my journey all over again. And, you know, I definitely know today, like walking into meetings, I have a humility and a willingness to follow all of the suggestions, you know. Before there was a little level of like, we're throwing you a life preserver. No, I want the lifeboat. Right, you know, your house is on fire. Here's a fire extinguisher. No, I'll wait for the fire department, you know? And in this case, it's like, you're going to save my life. So I'm going to follow your suggestions as you're laying them. It's a well-worn path that many people have walked. Right. I always want to look for the differences instead of the similarities. Today, I look for the similarities and not the differences.
Oh, I like that. Looking for reasons not to do something as opposed to, right?
Yeah.
Reasons to.
And my ideas always lead to me picking up that next drink or that substance, right. You know? It may not be immediate sometimes, you know, but it over time. So I stay close to my recovery today. It's a daily practice for me.
Right. And can I ask, when before you had your relapse on the psychedelics, had you already stopped going to meetings at that point? Or was it kind of all... in around the same, when did the meetings stop? I'm always just interested because I always feel that there's, you know, these markers, you know, where if you start looking back, like, okay, well, I did stop going to my meeting and, oh, I did, you know, stop doing this that was working. Did that happen before or was it all kind of part and parcel?
It's kind of like, describe it as like, I started taking my will back. What I was going to meetings and I remember having a conversation with, three people in the program. And asking them if psychedelics, you know, what they thought about psychedelics.
Starting to kind of just test the waters.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I got two people that told me that's a relapse. And I got one person that told me, no, it isn't.
That's the one you listened to.
Right? Oh, you bet I did. That's all I needed.
Selective hearing, right.
Right? Yeah. Someone to co-sign my bullshit.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But I take full responsibility for that 100%, yeah. Right? But, you know,
it's
amazing
how the mind works though, right? You know?
how my willfulness works.
Right.
How my lack of humility works.
Right.
How.
Yeah, well, that's it. So, you know, obviously, you know, you had that moment of, right, okay, we're back here or we're close. You dive right back in, start going to meetings again. And you feel like that there's something different about that go around now. And I mean,
absolutely. You know, I feel, you know, I feel like, you know, as I said, my intention, as much as it was off track, you know, was centered around a conscious contact. You know, and I've come to realize, like, you know, there's no shortcuts to God, you know, and it's a daily program and it's a daily practice. And, you know, the humility of seeing how quickly how my best thinking, you know, can derail, you know, my progress or my, you know, my walking along this path. I try to stay pretty centered in, you know, of myself, I am nothing, you know, the Father doeth the works. And, you know, that's the people in the meetings, you know, if there's a person there, you know, who's got, you know, 5 days of clean time, you know, 5 months, 5 years, it doesn't matter if they've got, you know, a second more than I do, they've had a little bit more power than I have. Right. So that could be my power greater than myself. It doesn't have to be anything that I'm not prepared to accept, you know?
Right, right. So, yeah, just the embracing the process. And I love that it is daily practice, right? And I love that, you know, there's a discipline attached to this. Yeah, there's no, you know, like I really don't feel this is rocket science. I feel it's discipline, you know?
discipline is, yeah, Blake, absolutely. Discipline is such a key word, you know, and in this recovery, I've looked, and part of it is that, you know, that I am an undisciplined alcoholic. And when I look at my life and I think of the things that I've abandoned, you know, the things that I haven't stuck with. Right. And when I talk to, you know, my sponsor today and, you know, a gentleman with 30 years in the program, and I ask him, you know, hey, I want what you have. Like, you know, how do you get that, or how have you done it? And it's discipline. It's he on a daily basis, you know, does the things that he's taught me have worked for him. And so if he's set that discipline in place every single day for 30 years, it's a lot. And also the more that I continue to do it, the more I come to realize that it's the greatest gift and the greatest blessing that I can do for myself. Mm. That's work I'm willing to do, because the work of my undisciplinedness leads me to such chaos and such turmoil, right, and have such an effect on my life that, you know, it would be insanity for me to stop. Right. And unfortunately, if I don't do it on a daily basis, that insanity returns pretty quickly. And I think a drink or a drug is a good idea.
Yeah. Right. I think that's such a great mindset though. And, you know, I remember I had a fellow who just had his 3-year cake, you know, the week before, and he was sharing, and he said, you know, I need to do more for my recovery. And I just thought, this is amazing. There's someone who's seen this, you know, solid amount of time. And I feel that's kind of what it takes, right? Is that, no, I'm still working on this. And you see old timers that are still working on it, you know, are still recognizing that I got to put in the work and the time into this. And like you say, it's a daily practice. So yeah, I think that's such a great philosophy. So is now a good time to talk about your segue into this field, you know? This is obviously, you're saying before that you're interested in it, you know, back in the day, and now all of a sudden, you know, Umbrella's a much bigger organization than when you first were introduced to it. What gave you that idea to come back and do this work? Like I said, I know that there was other careers and other stuff going on, but it seemed like a passion move for you almost when you got into this field. It still feels like a passion move for you. There's a lot of passion behind what you do here. What gave you that impetus to make that move into this field?
You know, at the time, like, you know, I was, I'm self-employed, and I had experience, you know, just the fact of coming back, you know, of coming back and beginning this work of recovery again, you know, and being at a place in my life where I had a lot of free time, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was working a program, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm doing the things that I need to do for that part of my recovery. And also, you know, being self-employed, the time spent in between the next job or the next, you know, meeting or engagement, you know, my mind starts to spin.
Sure. It's, you know, idle time. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. My mind starts to tell me all the things that are wrong.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I just felt like I needed something, you know, after 15 years of running my business, you know, I needed something to fill those gap spaces, because, you know, that was my mind sort of running, you mm-hmm. know, running rampant, you know. And one of the things that a temporary sponsor told me when I came back this time was get involved in service. You know, I'd done a little bit of service,
right,
but that was something that was suggested to me. So, you know, when I think about that, it's part of that is carrying kind of the message or the gift of, you know, of recovery, which I've been freely given, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, I have friends that work with Umbrella and have worked with Umbrella and have had experience with Umbrella and been through different programs and had kind of those supports. And I ended up just asking, hey, you know, like, what do you think? Do you think that might be a possibility? And I sort of understood, yeah, actually they're actually looking for somebody to do outreach right now. They have an outreach position available. And so I came in and I met with Evan. Mm-hmm. And you know, I remember one of the questions he asked me was, you know, do you have any, you know, formal education or, you know, any training, things around those lines? And, you know, I kind of took a deep breath and, you know, I said, no, I don't actually. And then he said, it's all right. Wait for the next question. And he said, you know, do you have any lived experience? And I said, oh, boy, do I ever, you know, and that was the start of, you know, of an opportunity that I'm so grateful for every day when I come here to, you know, to do outreach. I work at the Liver Care Clinic. It was a new program that was starting at that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, providing support and resources and outreach to patients who are receiving care through the Liver Care Clinic at Royal Jubilee Hospital.
Right. Which, you know, is it's a real heavy time. And I mean, the connections that you've made in, you know, between there and then the community outreach and now working in the hospital as well. You know, this is especially I feel with the hospital and the liver clinic, you know, you're meeting people where the writing's on the wall a little bit, right? They know that they need to make those changes. Do you kind of feel that impact or what's been your experience?
You know, it's, you know, I mentioned earlier about that idea about not working a program and having sobriety and it not really having the same richness and fullness of the life that I have today, you know, having mm-hmm. been able to look back and see, you know, that 12-year-old who started drinking, like alcohol was a problem, you know, and being able to see, you know, the places in my life where I was in denial or the places in my life, you know, where I was dishonest or the places in my life where I was, you know, not accepting my part, you mm-hmm. know. And, you know, one of the gifts of outreach is meeting people where they're at. You know, that's what, you know, Umbrella says, right? We're meeting people where they're at, mm-hmm. you know, you know, to hear somebody who is receiving treatment, you know, say they don't have a problem with alcohol, you know, they were drinking, you know, a handle a night and now they're, you know, they're down to like just, you know, 12 beers and a Mickey, you know, so there's not really a problem with alcohol, you know, so it's sort of like stopping in those moments and seeing, you know, okay, like this is where you're at and, right. you know, let's talk about that then, you know, would, you know, and looking to see if there's some goals there or if there's some awareness. Right. And also that's where I met them at that appointment. And, you know, I've also had the situations where, you know, at a follow-up appointment a few months later, there is a problem, you know,
okay.
I am realizing now that this is, you know, that any alcohol is a problem or,
right.
you know, that I do need to make some more changes. So, you know, it's kind of following them on their journey sometimes, yeah. right? And this is a fucking powerful disease. You know, people yeah. take this disease sometimes, you know, to the bitter end. There's yeah. there's patients at the Liver Care Clinic that, you know, that succumb to liver disease that succumb to alcoholism.
Yeah. Right. And where, I mean, you would think the writing's on the wall, but it shows how strong the pull is, right? And how incredible the mind is at being able to deceive oneself, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's cool to see those epiphanies too, right? When somebody who's not getting it all of a sudden goes, whoa, wait a second. I think I do have a problem. I think I do need to do something about this. That's quite the moment too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Those right. are the conversations, you know, like, yeah, to have somebody just come and this morning, you know, somebody that I spoke to this morning who came and so I'm going to be honest and laid it out and, you know, and has those insights and those awarenesses that I can remember when I got to as well too, you know, mm-hmm. and that's where, you know, now we're in that position where we can start to make some change, you know, we can start to take some action, you know, we can start to look at, you know, whatever that looks like in order to, you know, to begin that road of recovery.
Right. Yeah. And that's a really pivotal time. So, I mean, when somebody is on that precipice or they're just kind of entering into early recovery or somebody comes in the rooms, you know, for the first time, you know, do you have any, like, what's your words of wisdom that, like, is there anything that you do in part? Is that, you know, is there a message that you consistently share, or just depend on the individual?
Yeah, I think, with humility, I think, like, anything that I share is entirely my own experience. I think that's very important. You know, what worked for me, I can accept that everybody has their own journey, you know, and it looks different for everybody.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I fought till the bitter end to not surrender.
Right.
You know, to find some ounce of something that I could hold on to, of an old way of thinking or an old way of doing, you know, until I came to that realization that any part of myself that I'm holding on to is preventing me from getting better.
Right.
I am resisting the medication. I am resisting the treatment. I am resisting the course. Yeah. This is my personal experience, what it got to for me. I got to a point of, I need complete surrender and willingness to do what is being asked of me to do.
Right.
You know? Right. So, you know, there's some things would we used to take a spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down, right? That old chestnut, right? Is like, you know, there's some things that I really don't want to do that. And that's when I say, I'm going to do it anyways, because it's going to save my life.
Right.
You know, it's going to give me a life better than anything that I can imagine that I'm experiencing right now.
Right.
You know, I've been homeless, you know, like I've shared, like, other things that have happened to me in my life, you know, and it's like everything I have today is possible, you know, through the grace of God and through my recovery, right? Hand in hand, you know,
right.
Hand in hand, you know, I've the people that I meet that are in my life, the people that share with me, the people that, you know, support me and give me strength, and the people that have given me suggestions and, you know, shared their experience, strength, and hope that's worked for them is why I'm here today.
Right. Right. Well, and I see that willingness to, you know, and that, you know, the acceptance piece, just even in this line of work, I feel like you're somebody who comes in and takes in any suggestion that anybody has as far as how to do this work as well. Right. And I think it reflects kind of in your whole life and how you conduct yourself now. There's that, you know, I feel like, yeah. And anything that is said to you, you really take it in and you employ it, you know, and I think that's a huge piece. There's that humility piece again, right. That it comes down to, and recognizing that we need to help each other out and accepting that help and accepting input from other people, you know, that's a huge one. Yeah.
I lived a big part of my life cutting people off before they were finished. Oh yeah. I got it. I know.
Right.
Right. But then either not doing it or not really understanding.
Right. Right. Yeah. Really taking that time to soak it in. And, you know, I always do just ask this, and you don't need to answer, but I always, you know, somebody who's gone through the system and somebody who is working in the system, in the hospitals and working with individuals, walking alongside people from all walks of life, as our outreach workers do, you know, what are the biggest challenges you think we face as a community right now, you know, or what are, you know, do you see something tangible? Someone always asks me, you know, what do we need, you know, and I've always got a checklist of things, but I've got my kind of big ones, my big ticket items that do you have any that you see as being, you know, the biggest issues we face as a society and a community trying to face this incredibly complex challenge of mental health and addiction? I know that's a big question.
You know, I have an answer I like for a lot of these questions, which is that's above my pay grade. You know, I spent a lot of my time and, you know, probably fueled some of my addictions with this idea that I felt like I had control over people, places, and things, and I knew the way that the world should work. And if it would only work that way, I'd be completely happy. And wouldn't everybody be wonderful and happy along with me? Because, right. You know,
you had all the answers.
Exactly. So I think, you know, recovery is possible for everyone. You know, that's the latest umbrella, you know, slogan. I love it, right? Yeah. It is. It absolutely is, you know, and there's lots of different supports and resources that we can access along the way. There's lots of help that we can get. And some of those are government funded and some of those are, you know, are peer led and some of those are all kinds of different things and ways, right? There's not, I know I've heard you say a lot of time, it's not a one size fits all solution, mm-hmm. right? So I think I would just speak directly to the addict or the alcoholic who still suffers and say, you know, recovery is possible for you. If you want recovery, there are people out there who will help you and who can guide you to the supports and resources that you need, you know, and, you know, it sort of starts with stretching out your hand and your hand will be grasped. You know, a lot of times I've heard in 12-step rooms, you know, we'll love you until you can love yourself, you know,
right.
And, you know,
yeah, no. I think that's amazing. I think that's such an overarching message that recovery is possible. I think everybody needs to hear that. I mean, you think we need to keep repeating it over and over again, you know, and it's possible for everyone. Man, I've seen some of the turnarounds that I've seen in this line of work are nothing short of miraculous, right? And you know, people could say, and themselves would say, I can never do it, you know, and to see them now, you know, seeing success in the recovery, it's something really special, so. Yeah, I think that's perfect, man. And I like to think that everybody out there keeps that optimism and keeps that belief going and believing in people and the members of our community, right? So, and I appreciate the work you do. I think you've come in and you've made a huge difference. And I think you have this compassion to you and caring about the people that you're working alongside. It's really special to see, and especially see you continue to grow. And I feel, you know, this kind of work seems to be working well for your recovery too, you know, being around it and being in it. So, my hat's really off to you. I really appreciate you taking the time. Like I said, I know it's hard when you're out there working with folks and you're taking time out of your busy day to come in and talk about your story. But, I think this is really impactful and, I'm happy to have heard it. So yeah, thanks so much for taking the time, Derek.
Thanks so much, Blake. You know, Umbrella from top to bottom is filled with, you know, amazing, amazing people who inspire and motivate me every day. And, you know, I've said laughingly to my team lead, Jake, on a lot of occasions, you know, if every job was as supportive as who we are as individuals and as people, you know, what a difference that would have made, you know, to so many points in my life, right? To know right. that I could just be honest, you know, and truthful and upfront and that there would be some support and caring for me, not only just as an employee, but as a human being. So love and blessings to everyone too, as well too. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you so much again to Derek for coming on this program and sharing such an impactful message and story. I'm sure a lot of individuals listening are, you know, familiar with the Four Agreements. For those who aren't, it's a book in the spiritual realm, which focuses on, you know, four rules, as it were, with which to abide by in order to live a life of wisdom and peace and happiness. And one of those agreements is be impeccable with your speech. And while I was speaking to Derek, that's really what came to mind to me. This is a man who is impeccable with his speech. You know, he's carefully considering his words and measuring what those words or impact are going to have on those listening. You know, the intentionality behind what Derek says and the consideration behind what Derek says, you know, is really something and shows the integrity of this man. So, you know, I'm absolutely, you know, so honored to have him come on and share that story. And I'm so honored to have Derek be part of our team and, you know, have this passion and this caring approach to the work he does. So, you know, definitely somebody that we are forever grateful to have in the Umbrella fold. And as far as this podcast goes, like I said at the beginning, we're off to the races. We're going to be keeping these stories coming. We know that they're making an impact in our community. I hope that you keep on listening and sharing the stories of recovery. as Derek said, you know, so optimistically, and something I believe in, you know, recovery is possible for everybody. So please, if you have an individual that you know that is struggling, or if you yourself are struggling, please reach out to Umbrella in Victoria, but, you know, wherever you are, reach out to those supports and get that help. And, you know, change can come, you know, with hard work and determination. In the meantime, my name is Blake Anderson. Please be safe, and we will see you in a couple weeks.